This is Dylan FM, a Freak Music Club podcast. I'm Bob Dylan. If you love Dylan, you're in the right place. This season, we're going deep on Time Out of Mind to celebrate its 25th anniversary. Here's your host, Craig Danieloff.
For most people, Highlands is one of the masterworks on Time Out of Mind. It wraps up the album in a way that seems appropriate in light of everything that came before it, with a flavor of the devastation, but also some sense of digestion. Dylan seems to have processed where it is he finds himself. Of course, it also brings with it three things only glimpsed elsewhere on the album: optimism, acceptance, and humor. His descriptions of the Highlands itself is generally positive, and the fact that his heart is anywhere seems like an upgrade. He ends with the sentiment that his dreams and aspirations are good enough for now, which seems like a major improvement from the mood and attitude that fill the 10 songs that precede it. And we have the waitress scene, one of those bursts of humor that Dylan fans absolutely adore. Beyond all this, it's musically distinctive, lasts 17 minutes, which, even for someone who famously didn't care how long songs were supposed to be, was quite notable. Highlands has a calming effect, for the reasons I've stated and more. A listen to Time Out of Mind without the Highlands chaser leaves a very different residue. Our guest today is Scott Bunn, who writes prodigiously about Dylan and other thoughtful lyricists on his Recliner Notes website. Scott has written two great posts on Highlands, which he'll share today, and then we'll talk about the song and the ideas behind it. In the last 2 years, Scott wrote 81, by my count, really interesting posts on Dylan songs. They're all smart, insightful, not too esoteric, and liberally punctuated with YouTube videos and images, so they're fun and thought-provoking. In the first section of this episode, Scott presents his first and full formal Highlands post. Then we chat a bit about his work and other Time Out of Mind and Dylan issues. A few weeks after we taped this, Scott made a discovery, a possible inspiration for our favorite waitress and Dylan's interaction with her in the middle of the song. So he wrote a new post, which generated a lot of online discussion. I asked him to come back for a second talk where he presented this new theory, and we chatted a little bit about that. Links to the specific pieces and his blog itself are, of course, in the show notes. And now, here is Scott Bunn of reclinernotes.com.
Yeah, this is something that I wrote about Highlands off of Time Out of Mind. Asked by Robert Hilburn of the Los Angeles Times in December 1997 about the genesis of the song Highlands, Bob Dylan said the following, quote, "I had the guitar run off an old Charlie Patton record in my head for years and always wanted to do something with that. I was sitting around, maybe in the dark delta, or maybe in some unthinkable trench somewhere, with that sound in my mind, and the dichotomy of the Highlands with that seemed to be a path worth pursuing. It starts off as a stream of consciousness thing, and you add things to it. I take things from all parts of life, and then I see if there is a connection, and if there's a connection, I connect them. The riff was just going repeatedly, hypnotically in my head. Then the words eventually come along," end quote. A few years later, in December 2001, Mikhail Gilmore of Rolling Stone brought up Highlands to Dylan, and he provided additional information, quote, "That particular song, we worked with a track that I had done at a sound check once in some hall. The assembled group of musicians we had down at the studio just couldn't get it. So I said, just use that original track and I'll sing over it. It was just some old blues song I always wanted to use, and I felt that once I was able to control it, I could have written about anything with it," end quote. The Highlands are a specific place in northwest Scotland, sparsely populated by people. We know Dylan is referring to Scotland as he cites the Aberdeen waters in the first chorus. As Dylan said in those quotes, he evokes a utopian ideal when referring to the Highlands as a counterpoint to his regular, everyday existence. For Dylan, the Highlands are a place of the imagination and romanticism. Dylan's Highlands bring to mind the moors in the north of England, made famous by Emily Bronte in her novel Wuthering Heights. When Catherine and Heathcliff, the two main characters of the novel, are children, The moors are a place for rambling and play, representing their wild inclinations. Later, it is a place of escape for the two characters, acting as the only place they can be free. Virginia Woolf wrote the following about Emily Bronte and her sister Charlotte, the author of Jane Eyre. Quote, "They are always invoking the help of nature. They both feel the need of some more powerful symbol of the vast and slumbering passions in human nature than words or actions can convey. They seize those aspects of the earth which were most akin to what they themselves felt or imputed to their characters. And so their storms, their moors, their lovely spaces of summer weather are not ornaments applied to decorate a dull page or display the writer's powers of observation. They carry on the emotion and light up the meaning of the book." End quote. Woolf's description of the Brontes' use of nature in their work is similar to how Dylan utilizes the Highlands. He shares distinctive features of the region throughout the song. Honeysuckle blooming in the wildwood air. The wind, it whispers to the buckeyed trees in rhyme. Big white clouds like chariots that swing down low. This utopian vision is what is driving the narrator of the song to get through his own day. I'm going to go there when I feel good enough to go. In the last chorus, Dylan sings, "Well, my heart's in the Highlands at the break of day, over the hills and far away. There's a way to get there, and I'll figure it out somehow. But I'm already there in my mind, and that's good enough for now." The Highlands is an imaginative ideal for the narrator. He doesn't know if he'll ever get there, but it's his already. The yearning for the Highlands is enough to keep him going, to live, endure, and ultimately to create. What is it that the narrator is trying to escape? "Woke up this morning and I looked at the same old page, same old rat race, life in the same old cage. Feel like a prisoner in a world of mystery. I wish someone would come and push back the clock for me." There's bleakness, despondency, and a feeling of clinical depression in those words. Despite the gloominess, Dylan cuts it with his wry sense of humor. "I don't want nothing from anyone. Ain't that much to take. Wouldn't know the difference between a real blonde and a fake. If I had a conscience, well, I might just blow my top. Well, what would I do with it anyway? Maybe take it to the pawn shop." Is there anything more debasing for an object, let alone a conscience, than sell it to a pawn shop? How much are you going to get for a good conscience? How about a bad one? $20? $10? Of course, Dylan is at his straight-faced funniest during the narrator's exchange with the witness in the restaurant in Boston Town. The whole scene has a, "Do you see what I have to put up with?" vibe from Dylan. Moving to the end of the song, Highland includes one of the starkest verses in Dylan's career. "The sun is beginning to shine on me, but it's not like the sun that used to be. The party's over, and there's less and less to say. I got new eyes. Everything looks far away." Have there been any other words written in popular music that captures the weight of aging more than this verse? It's grounded, personal, and bleak. Dylan delivers the line, "I got new eyes," as if he's the bad guy in a movie. It's a threat to anyone listening. It immediately puts us on notice. The use of new at first implies that there will be an improvement, but then Dylan reduces the threat and instead tells us that things will be worse when he sings, "Everything looks far away." It forces Dylan to the Highlands in the last chorus, where he once again returns to his imagination. "I'm already there in my mind." The Highlands provide solace, and he can find acceptance. That's good enough for now. I also want to point out the connection between Highlands and the infamous Sad-Eyed Lady of the Lowlands from 1966, Blonde on Blonde. Both are epic, long, grab-for-the-ring songs by Dylan that close out the albums on which they appear. The image of the Lowlands is most likely inspired by Lowndes, Sarah Dylan's last name, when the two met. In an act of poetic transference, Dylan has evoked a distant place that could be the Lowlands of Scotland, but is much more than a specific location. Dylan describes the Lowlands as a place where the sad-eyed prophet says that no man comes. This could be an allusion to bedroom politics or of the mysterious nature of the song's subject. In both songs, Dylan is evoking a sense of pleasure, to push the listener outside the bounds of this world's geography and instead into the realm of metaphor and poetry. There's a funny anecdote about Highlands, courtesy of musician and producer Jim Dickinson. Dickinson has many credits to his name, including producing Big Star's Third, The Replacements' Let It Be, countless Ry Cooder albums, and of course, he played piano on the Rolling Stones' Wild Horses. Dickinson was one of the many, many musicians who played on Time Out of Mind, and he shared a terrific Dylan zinger with Uncut Magazine in 2008. He said that after they finished recording the 16-minute-long Highlands, quote, one of the managers came out and he said, "Well, Bob, have you got a short version of that song?" And Dylan looked at him and said, "That was the short version," end quote. Now, we've since learned from Mark Howard via Freak Music Club that there isn't a longer version of Highlands. But as said in the film, The Man Who Shot Liberty Valance, when the legend becomes fact, print the legend. So let's not get in the way of this deadpan comedy from Dylan. That was the short version.
Okay, Scott, that was fantastic. Let me, if you don't mind, ask a few questions about Highlands and about some of the things you said. First, I'd love to back up to 100,000 feet and maybe get your broad impressions of the song. It's so popular. And why do you think that is?
I think, you've chosen to do Time Out of Mind, which was such a significant album in Dylan's career, coming at a, specific turning point in his career as well. It came out in 1997. He hadn't had an album of, wholly original compositions since Under the Red Sky. So he had had, almost 7 years of, not knowing if this guy could do it anymore. And then, he comes out with this terrific album filled with song after song, conveying so many different emotions. And, all of those emotions are within Highlands as a whole. So Highlands even acts as kind of like Time Out of Mind, in miniature, even though it's a 16-minute song. It has, so many funny moments. It has the despondency, the bleakness, but it also has, that great Charlie Patton riff that he talked about, this sort of hypnotic droning effect. And it's just the perfect pairing of music and then Dylan's vocals, which allows him just to, go off in so many different directions. And the reason for the popularity of that song in particular is, I think I can speak for a lot of, Dylan fans, Dylan lovers. We like the big long songs, right? It's because there's just so much in there. I even mentioned, Sad Eyed Lady of the Lowlands, Desolation Row, Ain't Talking, these grand sweeping gestures that he puts in at the end of albums. Highlands just fits into that mode that he's been in, so many different points in his career.
And it's interesting, and I think even unique among those songs, in that it has these very distinct sections, the most notable being the waitress encounter, where, the humor picks up. You mentioned some of the, the jokes that are in that section, but why don't you drill in on that area a little bit and share some thoughts about the waitress and the eggs and Erica Jong.
Yeah, it's just so funny. And, it's just, most of it is, there are just so many of the details, right? Like when your friend is telling you a story, an anecdote, and you're just laughing throughout, it's because, they're able to convey those specific details that could come from nobody else. And Dylan's the best storyteller I know, right? And it's right there in the song Highlands, where he's rhyming, eggs and legs. He pulls, she demands that he draws a picture of her. It looks nothing like me. She gets all mad. She says, "I can tell you don't read women authors." And he says, "I read Erica Jong." I read some interview that when he originally sang that, and he sang Erica Jong, he started cracking up in the middle, and they had to go back in and overdub it. And you can actually hear it. If you listen carefully for that, you can hear Erica Jong, and then he comes back with the next line, and you can just hear the wisp of a laughter right in there. And so, what's great about that is he doesn't laugh in the recorded version, what we have, So it's all deadpan. And so Dylan's so good at this deadpan humor, but he's just hilarious with the telling of that narrative, especially with those details. So yeah, that's why I love that song.
Talk a little more about the groove. We know a little bit that he wasn't happy about the studio musicians re-recording of it, and there was an original sort of sound check workup. Share something about that groove and maybe the influences that drive it.
Yeah, and he said the riff comes from a Charlie Patton song, and I don't know which Charlie Patton song it is, and you know, who knows with Dylan, you know, he's not always the best source of his own stuff, so you know, it could come from someplace else, but I do think it does come from that sound check. I read something, Uncut did a series of interviews with people associated with Time Out of Mind, and I think somebody says that, it might have been Mike Howard, that you can actually hear the riff loop over. So it is a loop. And, you know, he famously said to Lanois and Mark Howard before Time Out of Mind sessions that he wanted to make a back record because Odelay had just come out. I think that's, I think if you listen to it, if you just listen to the guitar playing that riff, it's not a live thing. It is a loop. You can hear it turn over. So it feels like this old blues record, but it's inspired by, you know, very contemporary guy in Beck.
Yeah. And then another contemporary who makes an appearance is Neil Young.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I pulled this up. Neil and Bob kind of got off on a shaky start, at least from Dylan's point of view. He said in a Spin magazine interview in 1985, this is quote, "The only time it bothered me that someone sounded like me when I was living in Phoenix, Arizona in about 72. And the big song at that time was Heart of Gold. I used to hate it when it came on the radio. I always liked Neil Young, but it bothered me every time I listened to Heart of Gold. I think it was up at number one for a long time. And I'd say, shit, that's me. If it sounds like me, it should as well be me. There I was, stuck in the desert someplace, having to cool down for a while," end quote. And then he comes back and, you know, many years later, we know that Neil's played with him a number of times. They're buddies now. So in the middle of Highlands, he sings, "I'm listening to Neil Young. I got to turn up the sound. Someone's always yelling, turn it down." A few years later, in 2003, Neil Young returns the favor in a song called Bandit. And he sings the line, "You're invisible. You've got too many secrets. Bob Dylan said that," something like that. So I think that's these two great masters of songwriting sort of shouting each other out, answering each other in song. I kind of love that about both of them.
How do you think about it in terms of, obviously it closes the album. It has a bit of a different feel, although as you said, the themes from the album are in there. What makes it such a good closer and so satisfying?
Yeah, I think, like I said before, because it is kind of, it feels like one of those epics. I called it a grab for the ring song. Dylan's really going for it here. He wants to create a masterpiece. And so it fits in many places, but stands as on its own. You know, it's not unlike Murder Most Foul, really, off of Rough and Rowdy Ways. I think there's a similar grasping for immortality in both of those songs. And yeah, and Highlands has it all. Out of those epics, I think Highlands is really one of my favorites.
So we learned from Mark Howard that there's one other version. We got, you know, those images that are on the blog of the engineer notes. Anything specific you're hoping for if we get a Time Out of Mind bootleg series in a few months?
Well, I'd love to see if he played with the lyrics at all. I mean, we know that with Dylan, that he's constantly scribbling new lines, making stuff up on the spot. I mean,
Mark's paraphrase was they're entirely different.
Oh my now gosh.
That may be overdone a little bit. The reason that I wanted his notebook and asked him for it after the session was that he said that. And in the notebook, there are his transcription of the beginning and end of every line. Mm. So even though it's a little fuzzy, you can go in and sort of tell the one we have from the one we don't, but you can't make out enough of the one we don't to know. But I think the odds are good. There's a lot of different words in it.
Well, what I would love is if Dylan's still playing with those same themes that I talked about in my presentation, you know, that dichotomy between the sort of utopian ideal of the Highlands, this place, and then still, you know, having to put up with everyday life. I just want to make sure that that dichotomy is there, because that's one of the masterful things about the song for Dylan, is just the like putting yourself in both of those kind of places at once, and that yearning for something more, that something greater could be out there. But at the same time, I don't want him to touch that last final verse. There's just a sort of acceptance of aging in that I think is both graceful, poetic, powerful. And so, yeah, I hope he left that alone. And let's see if maybe there's other things maybe he put in a different women's author other than Erica Jong.
Do you subscribe to the theory or the idea that the album is sort of one unified story, or that different looks at the same thing? And if so, how do you think about this song?
I wrote about the first song on the album, Lovesick. I feel like Lovesick and Highlands kind of answer one another in a few ways. Lovesick is one of the bleakest songs on that album. I compare it to the Thomas Mann novel, Death in Venice, where, you know, the character's face is almost melting off during a heat wave, and there's a awful virus going through the city. And so people are dying left and right. It's a bleak song. Yet for Dylan, that's the only way he can convey the sickness that comes with love. And so I think there's a lot of connections between, I'm doing this off the top of my head, but I think there's a lot of connections between Lovesick and Highlands because of that yearning for something. Dylan is able to convey a lot of emotions in this song and through this album, I mean, and, you know, the acceptance of aging, we see it in Not Dark Yet. We see the humor, need a janitor to sweep me off my feet. We see Lovesick, the sort of the yearning for companionship and relationship. And then all of those are in Highlands. Yeah, I read in one of those pieces that Glanois said that Dylan just holed up on the farm and all these songs just poured out. I wouldn't be surprised if they are just from a month or 2 weeks of just fever writing on Dylan's part.
And it's not rude when she takes away your food to touch her fingers and let them linger.
So, Scott Bunn, thanks for coming back. I know you've discovered or thought of or realized some new things about Highlands, and we wanted to add it on. So thanks for coming back to continue.
Yeah, thanks. There's always so much with really any Dylan song, but especially Highlands. As you say, it's rich with possibilities.
You wrote this piece that I know got a little bit of attention and is very cool. You know, I went and listened to the song you're going to reference and thought about it, and it's very fun discovery. So why don't you, I know you're going to kind of present that to us, and then we'll talk at the end.
Yeah, sure. As I shared in my previous appearance with you, Highlands depicts a narrator with a yearning to escape the despondency of his regular, ordinary life. About halfway through Highlands, there's an episode in which the band keeps playing the same music as before, but Dylan switches to a different vocal delivery, more like a spoken word recitation than singing. In this section, the narrator attempts to eat at a restaurant in Boston town and has a conversation with the waitress. Immediately, Dylan sets the ironic tone for the narrator's conversation with the waitress with this wonderfully comic rhyme. "She got a pretty face and long, white, shiny legs. I said, 'Tell me what I want.' She said, you probably want hard-boiled eggs. After this, the waitress looks at the narrator and says, I know you're an artist. Draw a picture of me. The narrator tries to beg off, saying that he doesn't do sketches from memory. The waitress insists, and the narrator again tries to put her off by saying he doesn't have his drawing book. She counters by handing him a napkin. At this point, he is trying anything he can do to push back and says he doesn't have a pencil. She hands him one. The narrator relents and says, I make a few lines and I show it to her to see. Well, she takes the napkin and throws it back and says, that don't look a thing like me. The narrator shoots back, oh, kind miss, it most certainly does. The waitress replies, you must be joking. The narrator says, I wish I was. After a few lines about women artists and Erica Jong, the narrator moves out of the restaurant away from the waitress, back to the busy street, but nobody's going anywhere. It's a funny and memorable interlude within the 16-minute-long Highlands, but I've always wondered what inspired Dylan to create this scene. So let's talk about Terry Allen. He is a painter, sculptor, video and installation artist, piano player, and songwriter. For Allen, there are blurry lines between these modes of artistic expression, as he sometimes writes songs in response to his artwork, and alternatively, music can be the driving force and inspiration for his visual art. To consider Dylan's song Highlands, I want to talk a little bit about The Beautiful Waitress, the 12th track on Allen's 1979 double album, Lubbock on Everything. The song is a waltz, summoning a sound as old as anything that's been played in the American West, whether it be 1979 or 1879. The song is a depiction of a man in a restaurant and what starts as a flirtation between him and the waitress. Their encounter evolves from a few words exchanged to a lingering touch of fingers. Eventually, the narrator of the song kisses the waitress and whispers that he will, quote, miss her forever, as they have a heartbreaking realization that this will be their only moment of connection. After the last chorus, the song shifts in form, with Allen performing his own spoken word recitation. Here's what he says in full. A waitress asked me what I did. I told her I tried to make art. She asked me if I made any money. I said, no, I have to teach to do that. She asked me where I taught and where. I told her, and she told me, she liked art, but that she couldn't draw a straight line. I told her if she could reach for something and pick it up, she could draw a line that was straight enough. She said she weren't interested in that kind of drawing, but I always liked horses. I said I did too, but they're hard to draw, she said. Yes, that was very true. Said she could do the body okay, but never get the head, tail, or legs. I told her she was drawing sausages, not horses. She said, no, they were horses. And the song ends with those words. The encounter between the narrator and the waitress in the recitation is funny because at each turn of the conversation, their narrator's sense of self is subtly tweaked by the waitress, culminating in the last exchange about sausages and horses as an enduring reminder about the subjective nature of art. The entire recitation undercuts the sentiments of the song that came before it, which portrays an idealized romantic notion of two people instantly recognizing a connection and knowing that their interaction will need to count since they will never see each other again. Allen's recitation rebukes the fantasy nature of the earlier part of the song. The recitation seems to be Allen's ultimate message in The Beautiful Waitress, that real-life encounters in diners are filled with misconnections and unintended insults. The similarities between Allen's The Beautiful Waitress and Dylan's Highlands are strong. The two songs contain a spoken word recitation featuring a narrator talking with a waitress. In both encounters, the narrator and the waitress explore the nature of art, specifically drawing and its inability to truly reflect and capture a lived experience. Additionally, the exchanges between the narrators and the waitresses are preserved as light, comic banter, but at the same time reveal how the characters miss opportunities for connection. Allen and Dylan, in their respective songs, explore the search for an idealized world, but do so in different ways. For Alan, the narrator waitress repartee in the recitation is an ironic rejection of the romantic illusion of the waitress and narrator falling in love as depicted in the beginning of the song. For Dylan, the waitress in the Highlands recitation is deeply annoying to the song's narrator, reflecting the unsettled nature of his regular life. Dylan's narrator craves his idealized Highlands, a world of art and love, the sort of love found in the non-spoken word part of The Beautiful Waitress. But instead of the recitation acting as a repudiation of what came before as an Alan song, Dylan uses his spoken word piece as a way of supporting the musings within Highlands about a life without art and connection. It's hard to say conclusively if The Beautiful Waitress is the source, a source, or even an influence on Highlands. I don't think we can ever expect Dylan to ever say outright if he is aware of Alan's song. Nevertheless, it's fascinating to observe Dylan riffing off of a similar premise as Alan and using it for his own purposes in a different song and musical context. Within Highlands and The Beautiful Waitress, Dylan and Alan both utilize the same recitation performance techniques to explore similar themes of utopian ideals and the real-life implications about the function of art.
It is interesting, you know, any of these references people find in Dylan's work, they seem coincidental, they seem unlikely, but it seems like the sheer volume of them suggests that they're not. You know, if I heard the loose version of this relationship you identified, it sounds unlikely. But then you listen to the song, the song you just quoted from, and it becomes a lot more convincing pretty fast, besides the subtext that you've pointed out. It's really incredible.
And, you know, I don't think in 1997, when Time Out of Mind and Highlands came out, we didn't know the extent of Dylan's use of references. I think that we do today. I think the internet is an amazing tool for a lot of different things, and it's been especially fruitful for Dylan researchers like, you know, the kinds that you've been interviewing for your whole season, and the kinds that I love to read about. You know, for me, it was just something as simple as I was listening to this great Terry Allen record, and all of a sudden I listened to this song, The Beautiful Waitress, and, you know, the light went off, and I thought, this sounds too much like Highlands, you know? It's just both the themes that they're playing with, the specific characters, and then that they're using this spoken word recitation technique. There's too many similarities for it to be an entire coincidence.
Right. So here's an interesting similar reference. In the Clinton Halen book, Still on the Road, where it's kind of a song by song look at Dylan's work. He didn't make the identification you just made about this relationship, but he says, presumably the bar scene is intended to intimate why he longs for the Highlands, all while failing to tell us why his heart is there or where the Highlands might be. And you really made that point in the middle of your, you know, piece that the relationship of it, which is something, if you just listen, it seems this very weird interlude in the middle of the piece, but taking a more abstract view of the whole song and saying, okay, this is real life inserting itself in the middle of his dreamlike imaginings. It is interesting. So I thought it was kind of cool that Halen identified that.
Yeah.
At that time.
Yeah. And that's what we kind of talked about the last time we talked about Highlands too, is just that yearning, that idealized nature of the Highlands for him, for the narrator in this song, it needs to be offset by real world everyday life, right? And so the recitation acts as that. Whereas with Terry Allen, you know, the song is not a yearning for idealized. He actually imagines it. But then the recitation is the thing that undercuts it and yanks him back from this fantasy land.
Right. And for Dylan, of course, the song is in the penultimate position on an album where the mood and the need and the desire to maybe have a dreamland that's idealized has been set up for 11 songs or whatever the number is prior to this. So it's not without that context at all. On the rest of that album or in the rest of his work, you know, most of the people Scott, for example, has identified that Dylan borrowed from, shall we say, there's multiple incidents, you know, the Henry Rollins and some of the others where you get 10 and 15 pieces out of one source. Did you find anything else as you were listening that triggered any Dylan-related references?
And nothing else from the actual work in the post that you can read on reclinernotes.com. Dylan does talk about Terry Allen in a later interview.
Oh, so we do know he knows him.
We know he knows him. And so, yeah, I go into that a lot more in the post. And so he's definitely aware of his work. I believe in the interview, they ask, who are your favorite visual artists? He names one. He says Terry Allen. And then he says, I really like the designs of miniature golf courses. And so there's a whole sort of series that I lay out in terms of like how Dylan might have found that miniature golf course reference. And within that same book, there's also work about Terry Allen in there. So he's very much aware of it. And, you know, over the years, Dylan, sometimes he'll name these, I think it's in the Biograph interviews, those great liner notes with Cameron Crowe, where he talks about lots of different, you know, that goes on with these incredible tangents that basically we saw in the Philosophy of Modern Song, right? It's similar to what we saw in the Biograph liner notes. But anyway, so, you know, he talks about songwriters, secret heroes is what he calls them. And I think he cites Lou Reed, John Prine, I think maybe even David Allan Coe. You know, Dylan loves left field folks like that. But, you know, you could put Terry Allen certainly in that kind of category. You could hear Dylan say, I love Terry Allen. He's a secret hero. Because Allen, you know, never really achieved mainstream success, but he's kind of always been a songwriter. You know, David Byrne loved him and worked with him on True Stories. And Terry Allen's done lots of great work. Again, he's an acclaimed visual artist. But his songs are always strange, off-kilter, funny, heartbreaking, and definitely from a singular perspective. So I think it's safe to assume that Dylan knows some of that work, and it's hard not to be impressed by Terry Allen.
Thanks for listening.
Thanks, Scott, for coming back. Thanks for your investigation. And I'll, of course, link to the article, the full song, so people can go hear all of it. And Recliner Notes is full of great Dylan analysis on many, many songs for people to go read, as well as now a growing library of Elvis Costello as well. But thanks for coming back for the coda.
Yeah, thanks so much, Craig. Thanks for having me.